This is an interview with Mr. Alan Gillam. It's taking place at his home in Marrickville. The project is the City of Sydney's oral history project on horses in the inner city. The interviewer is Margot Beasley, and the date is the 30th of July 2007. So, Alan, we're here today to talk about your horses. In particular, the horses that you used to drive the W.C. Penfolds wagon, which was a very famous sight around Sydney until quite recently.
Mm.
So tell me about how you came to be doing that job.
Well, originally I got the job. I never knew that there was a horse and cart roaming around the streets of Sydney. And I was at my doctor's, I was having a doctor's appointment one morning, and he had a calendar with Penfolds on it. And from there we just started talking about it. And then, because at the time I was a watchmaker at Liverpool, and where Penfolds' head office was over at Kingsgrove is where I used to go and get my watch material. So I went over one day and actually had an appointment with Stephen Penfold. And he told me, no, the driver they got now is quite, you know, doing all right. And that was Eric Stenson. He was doing it for 23 years prior to he left. Anyway, what happened about 3 years later, they weren't searching for me, and they had a receptionist ringing every Gillam in every phone book in New South Wales until they came across the right one. And in, I think it was February 83, I went down and I had the job.
So how did it come to be as a watchmaker that you knew about working horses and how to use them?
Oh, well, horses have been one of my biggest fabs I've ever had. We also had horses back home, you know, they're just hanging around home, or we used to ride them and stuff like that.
Where was home?
Home is Wentworth Falls up on the Blue Mountains.
Mm-hmm.
And that's virtually how we had our horses, and that's why I got involved in them. But it's not so much saddle horses I was interested in. I was in the big heavy horses, draft horses, big harness horses. And I thought by getting this job, then my life fulfilment would be fulfilled, except for the job didn't last all that long. It only lasted 24 years. Yeah.
But so when you were growing up, you always loved the big horses?
Oh, yeah. Oh. I was totally fascinated in big heavy horses.
What was the fascination about?
Well, remember? I think more so the fact that you never saw them. Because like, you know, in a little town, the only horse we had was the butcher horse, Mr. Hook. He had a very light delivery horse, and he used it doing his butcher's deliveries. And being a country town, he delivered virtually everything else that came around, because we only lived about 3 kilometres out of the actual town. So virtually you could walk and get whatever we wanted. But it was just a service he had, and I used to wait and just wait for him to come around with Mum's deliveries and stuff like that. Yeah, it was good.
And so, but you had heavy horses of your own as you were growing up, or your father did?
Yeah, we had heavy horses used. I had quite a few years, Nugget, who was about a 3/4 draft horse, but he was that old, you just used to harness him up, went for a drive around the streets, and that's about it. We had a lake in the middle of the other side of town, there was a lake, and we used to harness him up, go over there for a swim when we got tired. We used to drive him back home, and that was it. But he used to enjoy it because he was a really aged horse then, you know. So, and that's, you know, or we may just dole him up doing things. That before I came down the city, I used to do a lot of school fates and stuff like that. And if the horse could walk it, then I would do the school. And every September used to be majority of spring, well, in springtime, all the schools up there. And I used to go virtually from Blackheath all the way down to Springwood. And if there was a place that was too far to go, if someone had a horse float and a trailer, then, you know, they would take us down.
And so what, you'd take the kids for rides?
Yeah. We'd just go down the school oval and just give them rides all day. And then in early 1980, I started up a tourist run around Echo Point. And then I was doing that. And then when I got the job at Penfolds, I kind of left all that behind and came to the big smoke. Mm. You know,
'cause so you started at Penfolds about when?
February 1983.
Right. So, and when was, what was the background to that? Because they'd had horses for quite a while, hadn't they?
Penfolds, yeah.
They were a real sight, very well-known sight around Sydney.
Yeah, it was, well, it was unique to Sydney. Penfolds were one of the last, well, they were the last companies to still operate a horse-drawn delivery service. Eric Stenson, like I said, done it 23 years prior to him. And they've had other drivers like the William brothers. They were doing it before Eric. And I think as early as I can track back, there was a John Fowler that used to do it before them.
And when would... So John Fowler would have been, what, after the war?
After the war. But they said it was reintroduced in 1949. William Penfold is about 67 now. He couldn't tell me if it was prior to the war or not. He doesn't seem to recollect if they had a horse and cart prior to that. But during then, they had two. They had a little two-wheel spring cart that had a roof on it. And then later, they got the four-horse lorry, which I used to drive. That was built by Tom McCotters over in Abercrombie Street. And that was built 30 years prior as a fruit wagon for some bloke that I couldn't say. But and then Penfold's got it, and then they've had it ever since.
And so that was the wagon. They were your horses, but it was Penfold's.
Yeah, Penfold's only ever owned the wagon. All horses and harness was the driver's responsibility and their horses.
Mm.
You know, Eric Stenson took big pride in his horses, and he used to have a set of show harness made every 2 years, and they were worn every day on his horses. With me, I didn't have as much money as what he had, so the only show harness I had was what I brought, and that was only used for show time. But, you know, I used to keep my harness as well, as clean as what I could possibly use.
So a show harness looks very smart, does it? What's the difference between that and an ordinary harness?
Apart from the cost of it, show harness is the top grade of harness that they use for making it, and it's more decorative than a normal sort of work harness, purely like it says, it's for show only. Yeah, but in the old days, big companies, when you go out into the show, they go out to win, and it was their pride and joy of showing off whatever they had. Tui's Brewery had a four-horse grey, dappled grey team, and they were the pride of their fleet. And previous months prior to the show, they used to pull them in and give them all the best attention, gave them a bit more feed to fatten them up a bit better, so they looked nice and round and well-going for the show. And the vehicles were kept, and they were... A lot of companies had special vehicles that were literally made as show vehicles, and they weren't knocked about so much. So with a vehicle on the road, it's rolling on the road all the time, you're pulling stuff off it, it gets knocked about. Even in those days, you couldn't afford to have it painted all the time. So what the bigger companies done, they kept these wagons aside, and because they weren't damaged or they weren't used all the time, they were in mint condition, or they might have a bit more chrome work on it than what they normally done. Or the carriage builders, knowing it was for show, would give it a fancy little scroll work, or they do a little bit more extra carving on it just to make it a little bit more glossier.
Mm. So yeah. I think what you're saying is that although during the time that you were doing the deliveries for Penfolds with your horses,
yep,
that other companies still would bring out horses and carts like for the Royal Easter Show, but they weren't necessarily using them.
No.
For work around the
city. When I took over, there wasn't a horse. The only other horse was a little pony, which Pearson's florist used to bring in every now and then just to do a few deliveries, and that was it. And that was only about once a month, something like that.
Uh-huh.
But true deliveries, there was none. There was only one other bloke, Rossi's out at Bankstown, and he was the last of the Milkos. But he never used to go to the show as far as I ever saw him there.
Mm.
He was just purely a milkman, and that was it. Mm. You know?
So when you worked for Penfolds, it was you were doing standard kind of daily deliveries of stationery stuff,
yep,
for Penfolds, because they were the big stationers, weren't
you? Yep.
So can you just, you know, for the benefit of people who never actually saw this, unlike myself, I did actually see you going around the city. Just describe
my
what
daily,
the day was like.
My day started 6 in the morning. I would hit the stables. My stables were over at the old showground up at Moore Park. When I started off, it was still the showground, but now it's the equestrian centre. Started 6 in the morning. You get there, you mix up your feed, you go over to your horse boxes. That's a box where you keep your horse in. Feed him. While they were eating, I was literally mucking out their box, which is picking up the old straw, the horse manure and whatever else there, change the water, and then when I finished all that, you would throw the bed up, which you clean where they used to urinate in the middle of the box, 9 out of 10, you just sweep all that clean, and then the clean straw, you used to throw that aside, and then I would go in, get pull of the wagon, because it was in a different shed, pull that out, just check the harness, just give it a wipe over if it was a bit dirty or dusty. used to take about an hour or so for them to have their breakfast and stuff. So, you know, there's a bit of work to be done. Brought them out, harnessed them up, put them in the wagon, and then I head off into town. First shop I went to was Pitt Street, which was the flagship shop. Loaded up. We had seven other shops around the city. While you're doing your deliveries, you went to those other shops, picked up other deliveries, then went and delivered. Delivered anything from Circular Quay to Central Station and anywhere from College Street down to Sussex Street. And I delivered anything from a pencil refill to a $750 fountain pen, or anything from one sheet of paper to, you know, six or seven boxes of paper. You know, on average, I was doing about 30 deliveries a day. And that was in between. I used to hit the city by about 9, half past 9, and I had to be off the roads by 3 o'clock.
So that was what, a local bylaw, was it, that said you had to be off the roads by 3 o'clock?
No, what it was mainly about, because most of all the parking restrictions in the city were 3 o'clock, and because we were so slow getting about, it was just as easy to try and keep the traffic flowing, just be out of the city by then. It's just more so the company came across that idea just to keep the traffic flowing, and we weren't a burden onto the traffic flow, that's all.
Mm.
But as far as bylaws go, there wasn't that many. I could park wherever I wanted to park on a no-standing zone, stuff like that, because horse-drawn vehicles are unregistered and you didn't have to have a licence to drive a horse and cart. So virtually you can get away with murder. Well, you can this day. In the old days, yeah, because everyone had horses, there were laws. Like, there are laws stating what you can and what you can't do, but because Penfold's wagon's been around so long and was more of a novelty than anything, most parking police didn't seem to care, or normal police didn't seem to worry about it.
And what sort of horses were they, the ones that you used?
I've had, over the time, purebred Clydes, down to three-quarter Clydes to half Clydes.
Meaning
Clydesdales, okay. Right. A half Clydie would be a purebred Clydie with something else like a thoroughbred or some other breeder horse over it, and then the progeny of that can't be registered as a pure blood because it's not a pure blood. So you just call them three quarter or half or something like that. Yeah. But I started off with a big 18-hand horse. He weighed about a ton. He was too slow doing my light deliveries because the bigger the horse, the heavier the hauling they do. Like, most of the brewery horses were all big, heavy Clydesdales because of the weight of the beer barrels. But the lighter delivery horses were more light horses. See, I was saying horses for courses, right? Whatever type of vehicle you had, so you had the right horse in that vehicle. And
so you mainly had Clydesdales, but there are other kinds of...
Oh, yeah.
Heavy horses used for that kind of thing too, aren't they?
Yeah, in draft horses, there's three main types. There's the two English, which is the Shire and the Clydesdale. Shires are a slightly bigger horse all round than the Clydesdale. And then we use the French Percheron, which is a clean-legged horse. Both Shires and Clydesdales have hairy legs. And the Percheron, they're clean-legged. They don't have that hairy legs down near their hooves.
And are there different benefits from different kinds of heavy horses? Like, does a Percheron have some advantages over a Clydesdale or Shire?
Not that much. Percheron's a slightly lighter framed horse, so I would say they would have a little bit freer action, depending on who you actually talk to. A lot of breeders reckon you can't go past Clydesdales for their action and their speed. But more so, I would say, I've never really had a Percheron because I don't really like the look of them, sorry. But it's more so what adapted to this country, because most of them are all come from the Northern Hemisphere, which is a lot colder than what we are down here. So, and being such a big animal during summer, that would have a lot of effect on the animal. Most of what I've heard and what people have told me, Clydesdales adapted better to the Australian climate than any other horse.
And so they coped okay with the heat.
Heat, yeah, yeah.
Mm. So during the course of your 24 years with Penfolds, how many horses would you have had?
Over that I've had about 7 or 8. There was Edward, Lady, Penny, Ben. Both Penny and Ben were progenies of Lady. And then I had Nugget. And then the last two horses I had were a mother and daughter team, Annabelle and Caroline. Caroline was the daughter of Annabelle, and they were the first pair horses we had. So over the last, about the last 10 years, we had a pair of horses, Black Clydesdales.
Why did you have a pair if you'd always used just single horses before then?
Well, the reason mainly why I kept them both on as a pair, because when I broke Caroline in, because, you know, she was young and she was unbroken, when I broke her in, I also broke her in as a pair. And I've also found over the years by having a single horse on the road, I used to get a lot of criticism being, in fact, in summer it was too hot. Why didn't I have water for the horse? Why didn't I have the horse under the shade? And the fact that the poor, you know, there was a single horse standing out there, he felt lonely and he was upset and he was distraught and all this other, so all these people told me so. But when I kept the girls on as a pair, no one ever came up to me and abused me whatsoever, because they saw two horses and they were always together and kissing or cuddling or whatever horses do together. That majority of people felt a lot, that the horses were a lot happier and a lot calmer. So from then I just kept pairs on.
So would you say that was the case, or that they were calmer when they were happier and calmer when they're in a pair?
I think so. See, with one horse, you know, I was always afraid that he might nick off. I've only ever had one horse nick off on me, and that was Lady. Oh, she nicked off twice years ago. One I had her parked in Barrack Street, so she nicked off.
What did she do? Run off with the wagon?
Took off with the wagon, yeah. See, by law, you've got to have one wheel locked up. And so it was obvious when she took off this, and she didn't actually gallop or anything, she just walked off. Anyway, she was virtually right up, virtually in Clarence Street, right up underneath the Harbour Bridge overpass when some lady pulled her up. And it was easy to find, because as she's dragging the wagon, that one wheel that was locked up was dragging, so there was this white line so you could follow it. Not only that, everyone saw her going, and when I got, went after her, everyone said, she went that way, which was a bit of embarrassment. But anyway, we finally got her back, and that was all right. And then the second time would have been about 3 weeks later. She took off from in Castle Ray Street in front of Piccadilly Arcade. She went all the way up to Park Street, down Park Street to Town Hall, George Street, and she went around the corner into Baffa Street before another woman pulled her up. And the woman reckoned that she was flicking her umbrella, and that's what kind of stopped her. Yeah, and all that time, she never hit anything or run anybody over, which was pretty good. Mm. Yeah, a bit embarrassment for me, but that was all right. Anyway, I had her working another couple of years after that, and she never ever done it again. Why she done it, I don't know. And then I had another horse, Striker. He was a bit of a nervy horse, beautiful horse to drive, had plenty of action, and he was a real smart and well-carried horse. And he just didn't like cement mixes, and a lot of the public would know that, because whenever the cement mix came or something else like that, he would get all tensed up. And there was one stage we had a bit of a bungle in Martin Place where he literally didn't want to pass his thing, and I had to get down and pull him around it and everything else. That was a bit of a raw deal.
So how would you break a horse in? Well, number one, how would you break them in the first place just to be able to pull a wagon? But also, how would you train them to work in the city?
Well, what I only ever brought three horses that were broken in and going beforehand. Edward, the first one I brought down, I brought him from a bloke down Bega, and he was a rising three-year-old then. He just used to pull a little tourist wagon around the streets of Bega. Anyway, here's the horse I had, and I used to do all the fate work up home, and he's the one I started the Echo Point work with. And his problem was that it used to take an hour or so before you could get him ready, because he was so tall. And he used to put his head up all the time. You could never get the bit in his mouth. So you had to climb on something. And every time you climbed on a box or something to put it in, he would turn around. And he used to fight you all the time. Yet, funny enough, when we came down to Sydney, he must have realised that this was it. This was work, and I just had to buckle down and do everything properly. But he was one of the best horses I ever had. You could virtually call him a call horse, and what a call horse is a horse you would put out in the lead and you literally talk to him by commands, and you asked him to go left or right or stop or start, and he would literally do that. And what I used to do on my way back from the town job, especially along Drivers Avenue, I used to get off the wagon and walk beside him and talk to him, and you tell him to stop or woo up and he'll stop, or you tell him to knee off and he'll go over to the right, he'll come here and he'll come to the left. Or you tell him to whoop back and he'll literally start walking backward and you're not near him, you know. Which you need a really intelligent horse to do that, and one that wants to work, and you know, and he was just like that. Mm. But he used to play up on times. He used to virtually every lunchtime we used to go down the Chips Inn. We used to pull up there, and the barman there used to have a schooner of beer sitting on the corner of the bar for me, and a bucket of slops, which is the beer that was spilled in the trays, and I used to put that in a bucket, and he used to get a bucket of beer at lunchtime too. That was about one of the best things. And I know, over the years, I used to get a lot of perks. A lot of the coffee barras and donut shops used to always feed me, because they realised that the horse was kept close to their barra, people would come and buy food off them to give to the horses. Uh-huh. So what their idea was, by giving me coffee and donuts and stuff, I would stay there a little bit longer and people would buy more food off them, so naturally they make more money. Mm. So it worked out all right for all of us, you know.
So when you said most of the horses that you bought were already broken in.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
But
yards,
there are special ways to break them in. Breaking in a horse.
Yeah, yeah. When you break in a horse, what you actually do, you've got to mouth it first. See, mouthing is 99.9% of everything a horse has to do. That's your steering. Without steering, you're not going to go anywhere. And what that involves is, in the very beginning, you actually put the bit in the horse's mouth. And what I used to do, I used to put a back band, which is just a leather strap around his girth, which is his belly. And I used to tie a bit of baling twine from the back band to the bit like reins and roll it around. So when he moved, he would feel resistance from the bit to the back of him. And you would leave that on for a couple of days and you would hope that he's, you know, finally got some form of a mouth. And then when you're comfortable with that, you then put, you rein him up, put sort of long reins, and you would walk around a paddock or wherever you are. Like what I used to do up at the showground, there was an area there called Cowboy Corner. And I'd walk them up to Cowboy's Corner, and that's where all the cowboys at the show used to hang about. There's a fairly couple of really big yards in there. So you go in there and you'll actually walk behind him and you pull the left rein, hopefully he'll turn left, and pull the right rein and he'll turn right. So you're actually teaching him to mouth or use his mouth to go left and right, and you gently pull it back and that would stop him, and then you tell him to get up and then he'll know to walk on. And then after a couple of days of that, you throw the harness on him, and then you just keep repeating all this every time you do, or every day you have a go at it. You teach him something more to do. And then when you're comfortable with that, you then put a tire or a log on the back, so he's now learning that he's got to pull something. So every day he's doing that, you put on something a little bit heavier, and then the crunch comes, the day comes that, well, we'll put him in a wagon or put him in what we call a breaking in gig, which is it's like a sulky with very long shafts. The reason why you have very long shafts, in case they're going to kick out, there's nothing there to hit, and you're miles away from him, so you won't get hurt. And then just drive them around. If he's going well, then you put him in your lorry. And then what I used to do is drive around the car park at the showground. And then when he's comfortable, and when you're comfortable with that, you then take him out on the streets. And when he's comfortable with cars and trucks and planes are going past him, you then drive him into the city. And once he gets into the city, that's it. He's now at work, and that's the end of him. Mm. He's now working, you know. But all that takes about three. If it's a good horse, it'll take about 3 weeks. If you've got problems, and it's depending on how long the horse. I had one horse. He was a real stunning little horse, and everyone said he's going to be, like, he had plenty of action as far as lifting his feet and everything. Anyway, he never made the grade. He never got out of the showground. Every time I put him in a lorry to go to do something, he'll dog it, which means he'll just lay down, and that was it.
So he just didn't want to do it.
No.
Mm. Well, yes, yeah. When you say action, you mean that they move their legs.
Their feet up and down, yeah. Mm.
Which means, I guess, that they'll get up a bit of a pace, will they?
Oh, yeah. Mm. See, a good draft horse should walk at least about 7 kilometres an hour. So you want something that can really step out and move the distance, because you know yourself, if you've got a set time to go from point A to B, you want something that can step out and get there in half the time, let alone then, you know, take longer.
Mm.
But most of my horses did step out pretty good. They weren't real showy horses. They're good working horses. Both Eric and myself never really done that good at the show. The best I... Well, it took us virtually right up in... I think it was the new showground, which was in the
This is at Homebush.
Homebush, yeah, which was, what, 7 years ago. So about 2000, that was before we got our first blue ribbon, which is first prize.
Mm.
And when I gave it, I presented it to William Penfold in a picture frame, and he was over the moon. He was running up and down the office showing everybody, and everyone was coming to me saying, what's he talking about? What's that? You know, I told him it's our first blue ribbon. Because he was really proud of the horses, because it was like his own private little toy, you know. Mm. And I think it was because of Will being in charge of the company, kept the horses, you know, right up to the time that the company was dissolved.
So you think they may have got rid of the horses prior to that if it wasn't for him?
I think so, yeah. Because we had a couple of managers. I had fights with a couple of managers. They were always trying to cut me wages or cut the horse expenses down a bit, and, you know, it just wasn't on.
Mm.
And then at the end of it, William would always step in and say something, and then one manager actually left through it all. I think William had a little word with him and he actually left.
Mm.
Yeah, but I had a lot of strife with that particular manager.
Because I guess the way it worked for Penfolds was you were doing the deliveries and you were doing actual work as if you were in a truck.
Yeah.
But also there was a really strong PR element or advertising.
Well, for the company, it was their way of keeping the company's name in the public's eye. The public would always argue saying that, you know, it was a pretty poor way of advertising using animals now with animal liberators and everything else. And my argument was, and I think majority of horse people that use them would say, that draft horses in particular are bred to work. They're working horses. And I think it's more crueler to have one sitting in a paddock doing nothing than what it actually is working them. Yeah. But see, most people only saw you driving up and down. They don't realise that, you know, when you have lunch, you put a nose bag on him and he's having lunch, and in between deliveries or depending on how hot the day is, you give him a bucket of water. Like, even though Sydney now hasn't got any water troughs, you still give him water. You've got to give him water. We all got to drink water. You know, it's just that most people weren't around when I was giving them water, and they think that's why, because they see me. And most people have only ever seen me in the morning when they're going to work, lunchtime when they're out having lunch, or, you know, knock off time when I'm going home or they're going home. So through the day, they don't really realise what I'm actually doing. So through the day or that period of time when you're giving them something to eat and you're giving them water all the time, and they just don't see that all the time. So naturally, I'm cruel to my horses, you know.
As they see it.
Yeah, well, that's how they see it, you know. But see, also, you've got to remember, most Australians now are about 3 or 4 generations removed from animal working. See, in the old days when horses were on the road, everyone knew that they had to work. That's the only way you're going to get your produce from point A to point B. You know, but now with cars, everyone seems to think that there's no need to work horses anymore because we've got automobiles to do it all. But in actual fact, horses in a very small delivery area is a better means of doing delivery work than what cars are, because you look at the milkers. In the old days, the milkman would get his horse and they'll do a delivery 3 or 4 houses, miss 1 or 2 houses, and what the horse would do is keep walking along the road, so the milkman's only running from the house to the wagon back to another house, and if he gets too far ahead, he can scream out to the horse and the horse will stop. Where with a truck today, the truck can't go by itself, so it's rather you get a runner that'll run the milk from house to house, or you've got to go from house back to your truck, drive up to the next house, do your delivery, come back to your truck, drive up to the next point, which is a lot slower with horses because they're moving all the time. You're running between house and the vehicle all the time. It works out a hell of a lot quicker.
Mm.
But now with the way Australia's building a lot bigger and everyone is centralising everything, our depots a lot further away, and it's a bit hard to ask a horse to go 40-odd kilometres to and from its point, you know, point of delivery all the time. So that's virtually why a lot of big companies got rid of delivery horses. It was just working too hard for them.
Because you used to have small depots everywhere. Milk or whatever.
Everyone had small depots, or little bakeries had their own delivery service, and he would do his, you know, 20-mile radius type of thing, and the next town will have another bakery, and he would have his own delivery service there. But now everyone's got these big central depots or central bakeries, and they just have trucks going, and they could travel anything up to 40 kilometres before they even start their delivery. Yeah, so it works out. Yeah, it works out. Now, this day and age, it is, you know, it works out better for trucks, only because it's all set up to do trucks. So if we ever have a scare where we can't buy oil and they can't use trucks anymore and they've got to bring back horses, then they've got to work out how to, you know, get the bakeries to deliver their own stuff to the smaller depots and start all over again.
They'd need a lot of horses.
Yeah.
Have you still got your horses?
They're up at Stroud on a mate's place. Annabelle's just had one foal. She's now, Leroy's, 18 months old, and she's pregnant again, and she should have a foal, January next year.
Oh, that's nice.
And if I'm ever back on the road, they'll be back on the road.
Mm. Yeah. And apart from your horses finally winning the blue ribbon at the show, you also got a trophy, I think, at the show.
Yeah, I got a trophy.
What was that for?
Remaining, and I'll just get it and read it. Oh, hang on, just bear with me. It's a bit dirty, isn't it? Presented to Alan Gillam from the people of Sydney in appreciation of being the last delivery horse driver in Sydney. And it was given to me on the 10th of April, 2004. And that was presented to me at the night parade of the Royal Sydney Easter Show.
And you weren't expecting it, were you? It was a surprise.
No, this is the biggest...
circumstances?
This was the biggest surprise I've ever had in my life. On Saturday nights at the show, they have a night parade, and what that is, all horse-drawn vehicles literally go on parade, and in the middle of it, all the light horses line up in the middle of the show, of the arena on one side, and all us heavy horses line up on the other side, and... as we're lining up, one of the green coats come riding his horse up to me and said, "I don't know what you've done, but they want you to come out of the line, go right to the end, and when they tell you to come, they want you to drive straight down the middle of the two line of horses." And I said, "Oh, I won't say what I was just thinking." I said, because all day I had a team of four in, and they were playing up a little bit, and they were a bit hard, and I'm not the best four-in-hand driver in the world. And I thought, oh, yeah, anyway. Anyway, as I was going out, everyone in the arena thought something happened, and I was going out of the thing, and little knowing what was going on, but while we were waiting, there was someone down the middle, the other end, telling the public that, you know, I've been, all my horses and what I've done and everything else, and it's now almost coming to the end. Anyway, then they waved me down, and I drove my horses straight down the middle of the line, and they went like a gun barrel, straight down. They were all in step. Everyone was amazed how good they went. Anyway, then this trophy came out from out underneath the table, and it got a bit teary-eyed and everything. And I had two mates up on the wagon with me, and Alan, he talks a bit, and he's ranting and raving, like, you swear blind, he was getting the trophy the way he was going on. And Lockie was having a rib at me also too. And then that was it. And then they presented me with this big trophy. And then that night, plenty of champagne and everything else was, you know, happening really well for me.
You struggled to hold it up, didn't you, when they first gave it to you?
Yeah. It's a bit hard to hold a team before and then try and pick up, because the seat on my lorry is about 7 foot in the air, and it's a bit awkward to try and get down off it when you're holding a team before. So, yeah, well, it was a bit hard getting it. But, yeah, no, it was good.
You managed.
Yeah.
And... you also know a lot about how horses were in Sydney, because you've talked to a lot of the old blokes.
The old blokes,
most
of them
dead and gone, about the kinds of things that horses were used for. When you look at the old photographs, of course, there were horses everywhere, horses and wagons of all kinds, before cars, and even for quite a long time after cars were introduced.
Yeah. Well, see, I used to ram there was an old bloke at Wynyard Station. He was a paper boy or paper man because of his age, I suppose. And he was telling me his very first job as a lad was to help his father, and they used to have lead horses. And what he actually done, when you go down into the harbour to pick up your load and everything, these horses, they to save your horses, what they would do is hook three or four horses on the front of your team, and they would drag up the hills, because in Sydney it's very hilly from down near the bays to up where you had to get going. And all this bloke done all day long was literally drove and rode horses up and down Margaret Street. So you would go, you take your wagon down to the docks or wherever, at the bottom end of Margaret Street, load up your wagon, and what he would do is hook his horses in front of your team, and he'll take you up, and he virtually only went as far up as Wynyard Station, unhook his horses, and then he'll go. You go on your way, and then he'll literally turn his horses back down the hill to bring another wagon up, and that's all he done all day long. He's just go up and down Margaret Street, you know. And there was hundreds of people doing that. Because see, all through with your horses, what you've got to do is remember, because they're animals and they're alive, you've got to try and look after them. And if ever you're going on a long distance out in the country, if you're coming up to a big hill, you would literally stay at the bottom of the hill for a couple of hours, rest your horses, get them pretty fresh, and then you attempt to go up the hill. Or, depending, like at Victoria Pass on the Blue Mountains, they had other people there, and that's their job all day long, was to put their horses in front of your team, and they would drag your wagon up the hill. Or if you had a big load going down, they would put their horses at the back of your wagon, and they would try and steady your wagon going down. You know, and a lot of people do to what they done, where they had skid plates, which were steel plates you would put underneath your wheel, because when you lock your wheels up, and if you're sliding, if you're on like on roads today, bitumen, you'll get a flat spot on your wheel. And then once you put it, because all wheels, all tyres on horse-drawn vehicles were mainly all steel. So if you worn a flat spot when you're driving, you would feel this flat spot, and it's an awful thing if you've got a wagon with a flat spot.
Is it?
So, oh, gee, yeah.
What does it feel like?
Well, instead of your wheel being totally round, one spot about 3 or 4 inches will be flat. So you've got literally, and that's what they call it, a flat spot. It's like driving your car with a flat tyre. You've got this, because normally with a wheel, as it goes around, where it goes flat, you'll get this big, like, it's like rolling over a little pebble or a rock. You'll get this funny uneven wear in your wagon, and you would feel it every time you go around.
So it'd make it a very bumpy ride.
Very bumpy ride. And in those days, they were bumpy enough with all the potholes in the road.
Yeah. And I think you said also that there always used to be lots of horses and wagons parked around Wynyard Park. Is that right?
Yeah.
Would they be parked around the outside of the park?
On the outside of the park, yeah. A lot of hansom cabs were used. They were pre-runners of your taxis. You used to wait around for the stations.
I suppose that they also they preceded the buses, because that's what it's still transport all around Wynyard Park now, but it's buses. Yeah. But the horses were doing the same
thing. I think in the early days, like we're talking now from about the 1890s upward, I think, the only horses that were ever registered were commercial horses like omnibuses, which is your pre-runner of buses, hansom cabs, and cabs, which were taxis. And they were about 2,000 that were registered by memory, I think. And
about when would that have been? Roughly
right up from about 1890s right through to about 1910, because from about 1910 to about roughly from about 1910 to about 1930s would have been about the peak of horse-drawn transport in Australia, and the way we were putting horses on the road. They reckon by the turn of the century, which, you know, like this century, 2000, would have been about 20 feet under horse shit. Because the amount of, for every man, woman and child, we were putting on about 4 horses on the road. And they thought it'd be a joke, because the amount of horses on the road, there'd be that much manure they had to get rid of. In Sydney, roughly majority of buildings in those days were only about 4 or 5 stories high, so that's a hell of a lot of manure. So our gardens must have been well fertilised. Yeah.
When you say that the horse numbers in Sydney probably peaked between 1910 and 1930, cars were also coming in and becoming more widespread in that
cars,
period.
Yeah.
But the horse numbers were also growing at the same
time
because of population expansion.
Population expansion and the way the city was moving that fast, you know, and because we were getting that influx of migrants in all the time. The whole country was really moving, you know, and that's the industrial era, and everything was just on the ball. We were moving.
Mm.
Yeah.
Now, there's also a lot of remnants still in Sydney. You talked to me about this the other day.
Yeah.
Of the life of horses and how you can see little, if you're alert to it, you can see little hints that there were once horses here.
If you walk along Kent Street and a couple in Clarence Street, if you look at the doorways of a lot of these old buildings, because most of the buildings in those streets there, from virtually Darling Harbour right up to say, York Street, they were all warehouses, most of all those buildings. And if you have a look at the buildings that have big round arches in them, you'll come across these two steel plates, like the width of a driveway. And on these steel plates, they had little lips on either end of it. What they were used for, it's like when you're backing horses, it's much like backing a trailer.
So these are flat. They're on the ground.
Yeah, they're flat plates embedded in the actual cobblestones. They'd be the width of the driveway, and there's two plates, and they're about the width of a car, so they'd be about 4'6" wide, or, you know, in distance,
between the two rows.
The actual steel plates would be about 14 inches wide. Now, what they were used for, when you were backing your horses, like when you back a trailer, if you steer a little bit off, then the trailer will swing around to one side. What you would have to do is drive forward, straighten up again, and then attempt to come back. So what these steel plates, because of the wheels on the wagon were steel, and these steel plates, it's like glass on glass, they just slip and slide. So what you would do is you're backing your horses up, you'd be telling them to back up. You could be standing at the back of your lorry, and you actually slide the wagon either side to keep it straight all the time as you're coming up. And it just helped the horses, well, help yourself, instead of going backwards and forwards, depending on how good you are at reversing. Because, you don't ever reverse a horse. It's called backing. You always back a horse. And so you've got to use the terms. Because I used to, early when I started driving, I used to always say reverse, and an old bloke used to always get me and virtually wrap you across the knuckles. It's not reversing. They're backing. You can't reverse a horse. You can back them. So you've got to use the right terms. Otherwise, you get into a lot of strife. And that was one. Another one, which there's not that many of them left because they're widening all the streets. Because we had a problem with our manure on the roads, what the council done was put these pits in every couple of hundred yards. And if you used to walk down the street, on the footpath there'd be a steel plate, and on the gutter side there'd be another little steel plate. And what you'd done is you lifted up these two plates, and the road sweeper would sweep the manure into these pits. And then later for a day, a bloke with a tip tray would come through, pick up and empty the bins out, and that kept the streets of Sydney fairly clean of all manure and everything.
And there's still a couple of those
left. There's still a few left, yeah, but they're getting very hard because every time they put new curb and guttering in, they demolish to get rid of them because there's no need for them anymore.
Mm.
You know, and if you go down on Hickson Road, just up from Pier 1, you'll see all these big rings in on the brickwork, and what they were for, these tie-up horses. They used to bring your big teams as they're all waiting while you load your wagons up. They usually tie the horses to them, so they're just standing around. And there's about six or seven of them still left in the wall.
Yeah, and the horses would be waiting there, of course, for the ships to unload.
Unload and whatever happens. So they could be standing around all day. So instead of, you know, somewhere to put them, they used to just tie them up, because they'd be fully harnessed, ready to go. So you just tie them up there and you just wait until your wagon's loaded or whatever the case may be. Mm. Hitch up and away you go.
And there was also a lot of industry around the city associated with horses because, yep, of course, a lot of things had to be made and manufactured. And there was one particular place in Kent Street you mentioned, that Weeks.
Oh, J.J. Weeks. Yeah, it's on the corner of Kent and Jewett Street. The building's still exactly the same as when he had it. The building now is used for Roses Only, which is a flower shop, but he had it. It was a big harness section. They made saddles, harness, and all sorts of leather goods. And they had one section there that was collars, just made for collars, which is the big leather part that goes around the horse's neck. There's actual photos of them sitting up on the roof having their photo taken. But he was there for quite a few years. Yep.
Can you remember when it, or do you know when it might have
disappeared?
Yeah. No, that's fine.
I would say he would have still been there right up into the 20s. I know that another saddle shop, Jay Brush, he used to be in Clarence Street because I used to stop there, and he disappeared about mid-80s, about 88, I think, or between 86 and 88.
So as long as that, he was still there.
Yeah, he was still there. And then I think he merged up into Goodwoods, which is a saddle shop now up at Broadway, just opposite Victoria Park, which I got a funny feeling they're no longer there either.
Yeah.
Because they amalgamated in with Brighton Saddlery, which is a saddle shop out at Kensington. But JJ Brush, they used to make all their own stuff, and JJ Wicks used to make all their own stuff.
Mm.
Now, and I was told that there was about 28 farrier shops along George Street in the early days, so if ever you threw a shoe or anything like that, you didn't go too far before someone could nail another one on.
Mm.
Yeah, because down the bottom end of Sydney was all horses. There were a few places in Kent Street. There were stables, livery stables. Harbour Street, which is now the part of the Eastern Distributor, it used to house Fresh Fruit and Ice Company's horses. They were...
part of the Western Distributor, I think.
Western Distributor, yeah. Virtually where the underground Eastern Distributor, the Cross City Tunnel used to be, roughly in that area there, was their stables. And they were classed as the best working stables there because in their yard was a big round trough or big round garden, like on a traffic island, and you had to drive around that to get in and out all the time. And because you were going around all the time, the vehicles weren't stuck. And, like, if you go into a square, you just pile your vehicles up in a square. So if you were the first out in the morning and your wagon was down the back, you had to move all everyone else's vehicles out to get to it. But working in a round system, everything was round, and so it's just a matter of coming in and driving out. And they were, a lot of the old blokes reckon they were one of the best working stables Sydney had. And up at the ABC building in...
In Ultimo?
Ultimo in
Harris Street.
That was Dairy Farmers. they had all their horses there. I think they had about 130, 150 horses at stable there at any given time. And I was told that at the end of it all, they just dragged all their vehicles into a paddock there and put a match to them all and just burned them all. The only ones that were survived were their show vehicles, and they were handed down to Lionel Ware, who now, which virtually all the vehicles you see in the show ring today were the old company's show vehicles, and because they were a little bit classier than their working vehicles, they offered them to people like Lionel Ware or Ware's Livery Stable if they wanted them. And Lionel took most of all Dairy Farmers because he was still very big in the horse industry and he could use them. Now his son Graham Ware shows them at the Sydney show.
And what other companies' wagons would have been in the show or are still in the show apart from Dairy Farmers?
Well, in the milk class, you've got Dairy Farmers, Fresh Fruit and Ice Company, and one or two privately owned vehicles, which were Dairy Farmers or Fresh Fruit Ice Company. People have brought them and put their own name to them. In the baker's cart, you've got Fielder's Bakery, Tip Top Bakery, and Weston's, and they're down from Goulburn, which come up. And then miscellaneous class, which is like two-wheel vehicles, they're virtually all privately owned now. In our four-horse lorry class, I still show the Penfolds lorry. Couple of hardware. A. Hudson's used to have a wagon. They show every now and then. Grace Brothers have two little vehicles. They've got a little van and a tabletop lorry, which they show every now and then. And that's about it. Then you've still got your breweries. Cooper's Brewery from South Australia still show a team of horses. And Carlton and United from Melbourne come up because they had their big team stabled here, but they're now down in Melbourne again. Tooheys and Tooths used to have a very proud team of horses. Tooheys used to always use Dapple Greys, which they were very proud of. And apparently in the early 30s... They were in the brewery lane loading up. I forgot to tell you this the other day. They were in the brewery lane loading up their kegs, and a steam pipe broke, and the horses went bolting down the lane, and there was a Ford or something in the way. In a way, these horses ploughed straight into this car, and one of their good show horses got stuck in between the car and the windscreen. And in a way, what they'd done, the only way around it to save their prize horse was to literally pull the cart apart, and that's what they'd done. And then when they got the horse out, and it only had a few light scratches in it, but what they left a little sign on the windscreen of the car, because the car was mutilated, because they literally cut it to pieces if they couldn't unbolt it, whatever it was. And they just left a little card saying, come and see us at the brewery and we'll fix you up for the damage to the car. But that's virtually... Oh, yeah, the horse only had a very light couple of light scratches. But that's how pride and how prized they were with their animals, you know. When you got a really top prize winner that used to do well, because in the old days, they virtually never had anything. And if you could, you know, show off your horse, then you, that was proud. And see, tip drayers were the worst of the vehicles because they were big, clumsy-looking vehicles, and you couldn't really do much to a tip drayer. So what they used to do is decorative all their harness. And tip dray harness, some of it was really nicely done. They had ornaments all over it, and that's the only way they could do it. Or they put housings, which is a big circular leather thing. They used to put it on top of the horse's collar and above their neck.
What's that word? Housing.
Hmm. Yeah, and it's just a big round leather thing they had on top of the horse's neck, and that was all brightly studded with studs and all sorts of things. Or companies used to have their company name on it and stuff like that, but that's about the only way they could, you know. And most of these blokes, because you had the one horse and you worked it all the time, you used to take a lot of pride in it. So naturally you would make sure that the horse is well cared for. So you might try and give it a little bit of extra feed just to look after it. Or you just kept the harness nicely cleaned. Mm. And, you know, because the harness is all the same, it's all black anyway. So then they started putting coloured pieces on it. And then they put bells on it to make it look nice or sound nice. And they've done all sorts of funny little things over the years to make them so they can just that extra little bit of point, or, you know, that, but that's the only way you used to take pride in what you had.
Mm. Yeah. The other thing I wanted you to talk about is the horse lifts that used to be in Sydney.
Oh, yeah. The only thing I ever wanted to do was to put my horses on an elevator. And an old bloke by the name of Mick Stapleton used to work the city a fair bit. And he told me there was only ever three elevators that he knew of. One was in the Queen Victoria building. The other one...
that one is still there.
No, that's gone.
It's gone too.
Yeah, it's all gone. The other one was in City Arcade, which was on King Street, virtually opposite... Well, the building is demolished now, but the main arch is virtually opposite NRMA House in King Street. And the other one was up on the corner of York Street and York and Market, which was Home Yardage. And it was just demolished just the other month, really, because they're building the new building now, and that was the one I was hoping to get on, but it was something that I thought my job was going to be forever and that building was going to be forever. So I had plenty of time to get on it, but unfortunately... I run out of my job, and now they're demolishing the building, so it'll be gone too.
And they want what you wanted to do was actually try out your horse and wagon.
Yeah, all I wanted to do was just...
on the elevator to see how it was done.
Yeah, yeah. See, what I've done over... because I was the last of it, and I was the only one on the road, it was very hard to... well, people can explain you how to work it, but it was very hard to do it. So what I try to do in the years that I was on the road is to do literally everything that everyone ever done with horses, and to put a horse on an elevator, I thought that'd be pretty good, because old Mick Stapleton, he literally asked me which way I would do it, and I would have thought, well, like anything, you just drove it straight in. And he said, no, that's the biggest mistake you can have. He said, what you actually done was backed them on elevators, because what happened when the elevator, because they weren't closed in, they just had a chain or something because they were open. And what happened, as the horses came down, when you pass that first level, it all became open, and then they might have a tendency of walking on, and then in actual fact, they'd be walking off the elevator because it'd be all open. And he said, that's why you always backed them, because when you backed them on, the actual wall of the building was, that's what they were looking at, because you would at first close the doors, because that's on the street side, and as they're coming down past street level, they'd be facing the wall all the time, so they wouldn't have that tendency of walking forward. So, and that's something I've always wanted to do, but that's something I'll never be able to do now, because there's just none of them about.
But those elevators, of course, were used, certainly in the Queen Victoria building, used because that building was originally a market.
Market, yeah.
So it was picking up produce and delivering it and so
on. Well, I was told when the blokes were revamping it, that when they came across down in the basement area, that they had actual sightings of old stables down there. So they were horses stabled at the very bottom of that. But unfortunately, that was virtually after they'd done all the renovations to the building. Mm. And another building which had stables down the back of it was the post office.
The
GPO in Market Place. Yeah, because many a time I've actually, if you walk past it now, the very end gateway has got two black gates where you actually drove your vehicles. And right up to when it was still a post office, postal vans used to drive in and out of that building. And there's another entrance on the George Street side, which I think is their main car park now. But plenty of times I used to drive down the Pitt Street because I always had a bloke on the footpath to stop the pedestrians going through. And I used to cause a bit of a strife because, you know, they're seeing this horse and cart drive into a building. And then you go down the bottom because that's where they had all the dispatch and everything. Yeah,
You're still talking about the GPO.
GPO, yeah. No, this is under the basement of the GPO, which I think now is a restaurant area. And it was just a big black hole in those days where trucks were and everything. You go up to a loading dock and back them into a loading dock. And I only ever went there to send off parcels, never to pick up anything. And then I had the choice of coming back out through Pitt Street side or George Street side, depending on where I wanted to go.
Well, the GPO, of course, there'd be plenty of people probably listening to this in the future who won't remember that building as the General Post Office.
No, it's now the Western Hotel.
Yes. Yeah. But, of course, that would have been a huge site for horses because of delivery and so on.
Yep, yep.
So stables would have been absolutely necessary.
Stables, yeah, because postal, from virtually word go, always had contractors doing. See, Cobb & Co., that had their main delivery out through their states, or, you know, country, inland country was all done by Cobb & Co., or it went by rail, the only other means of effort to get mail out. But horses was, in the early days, horses was big. And you'll see photos of Cobb & Co's, and they'll have all this massive, great big wicker baskets tied over it, and they'd be sticking out the sides and, you know, three or four on top of the roof, and that was all mail or parcels or whatever else that was going out from other people. So, yeah, and then I don't know how many stables they literally had underneath it, but they had quite a few, I was told. So, and there was all that. The railways were another big users of horses. It was my uncle, actually, he was telling me, but over at Shalora, they had shunting horses, and what they were horses that literally pull the cars out in time for them to hook up with the engines and stuff. And he was saying that what they used to do, the horses used to get them to a certain level of movement, and the horses would literally jump out of the way, and they would just line up, and they would hook into each other, or they'll just go up. And he seems to think that there might have been the odd one still working right up to the mid-60s up there. Mm. Yeah, because I know up in Newcastle they still had mine horses, and these horses literally went underground in the mines, and they would pull the coal cars underground to where the elevators were to bring them upstairs. And every now and then the horses working in coal mines were stabled down on whatever level underground, and they could be working anything up to 9 kilometres underground. And then they would, every now and then, they would come up top for a spell, and they would go mad for a first couple of days because they weren't used to the light, and the light from the sun would just send them crazy for a while.
That sounds rather difficult for them.
Yeah. Do you want to just...
And one other... One other thing I wanted to ask you about, Alan, is whether you actually get particularly attached to your horses. Do you have favourites?
Yeah.
Or do you...
You do get attached to them. Ray Martin had an interview years ago with me, and he said, "Oh, do you get attached to him?" And I said, and I just happened to say, "They're better than a wife," or something like that. And he said, "Oh, why is that?" And I said, "Well, they'll do whatever you ask them to do, and they never, ever answer you back." Anyway, he roared with laughter. Anyway, that was the end of the interview for quite a while, because he couldn't work up something to say after I said that. But yeah, no, you do get attached to them. They end up being like an extension from you. Right, because they're forever giving you, like, when you get a good horse and you work them so long, they're waiting for you for that next command, they're waiting for that next extra bit, and they're always got their heads out in the morning waiting for you. And at the end, both Caroline and Annabelle, they knew when I drove into the stables, like, If you go to the equestrian centre now, you've got to drive up around the left-hand side of it, and there's a car park right at the back. My horses were on the right-hand side, out on the wall side, right down fairly close to the front. And everyone always knew when I drove in, because these horses would prick their ears and both of them would stick their head out the door and look up to the car park waiting for me to come in. Mm. Like, I was never on time most of the time, right? Yet they knew, and like, people will come up to me and say, they always know when I drive into the thing. Like, horses, I don't know if they can fully understand the sounds of a car or something. Well, they wouldn't with mine, because they never ever saw me in my car. But they knew when I was in. And that was another thing too. Horses, when you're driving them, everyone said, oh, you never drive your horses, but they're always going somewhere. And I said, oh, yeah. I said, horses are coloured blind, but when you stop at a set of lights, they know which one's the first one. And on a couple of occasions, both Annabelle and Caroline, they knew, and Edward used to always know, if I was in the left gutter lane, they always know when that light was green, we'll turn left. If I was in the middle lane, we'll just keep on going straight. And if I was in the right lane, we turn right. And even though they're coloured blind, they know. And also, too, I don't know if you ever pull up beside a bus. Just before the lights go green, buses will start creeping forward. Well, horses used to beat the buses all the time. They knew roughly when the lights were going to change. And there's nothing worse than what happened. I never believed that they knew what they were doing, so I would always pull them up. But the lights used to always change, and then you let them go again. But they were good at doing things like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, we probably should make it clear that you and your horses ceased doing the round for Penfolds because the company finished.
Oh, semi-finished. Yeah. Like, the family sold the business. Another company brought it, and then in turn they franchised it out. But when they franchised it out, they never allowed any room for the horses to remain.
And this was 2004, I think, was it?
2005, the end of 2005. October 2005, we went off the road.
Hmm.
Yeah, because Hillary, who brought the four Sydney shops, he kept me there for about another 3 months, but he just couldn't afford it. So he just had to let us go.
Hmm. And so now you drive coaches for a living, I think.
Yeah, I drive for Murray's coaches, horse-drawn coaches, motorised coaches.
I was just wondering if a lot of people who work with horses and have worked with working horses, if they also sometimes move into that kind of work of different kinds of driving. Would that be a fairly common thing to happen?
Yeah, I think majority of horse drivers, if they didn't retire, would have went into truck driving, because that's virtually what we are. And it's delivery service, so if you still do your deliveries, then you've got to switch over to cars and stuff like that.
Now, are there other things you'd like to say, any particular memories or conclusions about the life of the horse around Sydney?
Oh, I wish that I could be back on the road, and I wish other horses could be, because I don't care what anyone says, there is a part where horses still can remain and work on the road. And not only that, if there was a way of going back on the road, it'll be something there for the future generations. Because like I was saying before, we've now removed ourselves that far from horses that it's like everything else. You take something away, it's like Sydney was full of gas lights. There's hardly any gas lights left. And I argued quite a bit when they were refurbishing down Macquarie Place, there was 3 gas lights there. And the blokes that were doing it told me they were all going to go back in. Not one of them went back in. And then I asked them what happened to the gas lights, and they said, well, I don't know. Yeah? And it's like the old water fountains, the old drinking water fountains. There was a beautiful red marble one up out in front of Moore Park, and that was demolished because that was in a little triangle on the corner of Moore Park Road and Drivers Avenue. There was a little triangle garden, and this fountain was in the middle of the triangle fountain. And Centennial Park Trust wrote in one of their monthly magazines that it was going to be put back in the corner or in the middle of Moore Park Road. And it was about 6 years ago, and that's never. And unfortunately, so much of old Sydney has been destroyed that You know, we're going to wake up one day and not know that there was anything ever in Sydney because it's all modern skyscrapers and everything else, which I believe is a shame.
Do you think there's a chance that horses might come back? I mean, oil is a finite reserve, so we may eventually have problems with petrol.
I would love to think that that would be it, but I think we're in a new generation where we really haven't got time to go back with horses. Horses are very nice, and those that operate them love them, but they take a lot of care, and a lot of time has to be spent with them. Like, even though most people saw me on the road for 6 hours a day, there's another 4 hours behind that. And weekends, you've got to look after them on weekends. And I think we've got ourselves in that carefree attitude that we really don't want to do any more than what we have to do, and leisure time is more important than work time, that I really don't think you'll ever see horses back on the road. Not like how we used to see them. I know petrol's getting, or oil's getting scarce and everything else, but I think we'll come into the electric age where we'll have electric motors and they'll be running it that way.
You did tell me on another occasion that there was a rise in the use of horses during World War II. When there was a bit of a petrol shortage.
During the Second World War, when petrol was shortage, and you know, there were still a few horses roaming around, or they were, you know, just being put out into paddocks. David Jones was one company. They brought horses back on the road to do their inner city deliveries, and a few other the big delivery houses brought their vehicles back on the road for a short time. But as soon as the war was over, virtually right up to, I would say, mid-60s, early 70s, virtually all horses were off the road. They just got virtually they went off the road overnight because petrol was back easy and cars are a lot easier. And see, also with a car, you can put it in the garage and leave it there for 6 months or maybe 12 months and come back to it. Providing the battery is still good, you just get in it, kick it over and it'll go. With a horse, if you put it in its stable for 6 months, you're still got to come every day and feed it. Mm. And I think that's the bigger problem. Mm. People just don't want to do that type of work anymore. Mm. It's like all the work last century was all very labour intense. Everything, like, you look at all the old photos, you know, to dig one hole, even though we all joke about the councilmen, you know, one bloke's working but there's 10 standing around, right? But today, those 10 standing around are holding some electronic machinery and it's all done by hydraulics and stuff like that now. And I don't think you'll ever see that type of work back again.
Okay, thank you very much.